You're listening to the Eyes on Isles podcast with Matt O'Leary and Mitch Anderson.
Hello and welcome to the Eyes on Isles podcast, episode number 22. Mitch, do I even have to ask what edition this is?
Yeah, sure, go for it. I don't know. I didn't do any research whatsoever for the number.
Number 22.
It's not, honestly, it's not even ringing a bell right now. There's nothing in my head at the moment except for the topics on our running order. Outside of that, blinders, baby. I'm like a horse driving a buggy.
You're going to get so much heat on Twitter for this. You're tuned into the Mike Bossy edition of the Eyes on Isles podcast.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you know, that's his numbers in the rafters, Mitch. Legendary Islander,
never
500
heard of
plus
him.
Goals. No, not
never
ringing the bell.
Heard of him.
Okay.
Oh, you mean Michael Bossy? Oh, you had to say it in a French accent for me to pick it up, buddy.
Okay. Now it's all making sense.
Yeah, no, that's a little embarrassing. I don't know why I couldn't think of it. It was completely. I knew as soon as you said it, I was like, I need to know this. No, Kyle Okposa was last week. Josh Bailey is 12. What am I missing here? Oh no. And there was a panic going on in my head, and it's now gone, and the embarrassment is starting to settle in. So welcome to a regular day in my life.
It's like when you are all stressed out about taking the SATs and you're like, what is my name? What is my name? And you forget how to spell your name.
Well, we didn't have to do those here, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you know, you don't know what SATs are?
A standardized assessment testing or something like that.
Yeah. You have to take it to
like
get into college.
Score that you got. Yeah, we don't have that here.
Oh my god, lucky
we have
you.
Standardized testing, but that came in after I finished high school, so sucks to be you guys in high school now.
Yes, anyway, we're here to talk some Islanders with you.
Yeah, not high school, because that was a troubling period in my life.
Oh boy, this episode can get dark real quick.
Yeah, I will regale you with embarrassing stories probably on the live pod if anyone's going to be there for the live pod.
Ooh, good
make
plug.
Sure to ask me about embarrassing high school stories and I'll cue them up for you.
Yes, now that you mentioned it, can we just do a quick plug on that before we get into it?
Absolument.
Okay, so on Friday, February 2nd, just in a couple weeks, we are doing a live Eyes on Isles podcast episode from the South Hempstead Fire Department. All of the info on it is on our Facebook page. Facebook.com/EyesOnIsles. So you could check it out there for more info. We're doing raffles and we're going to donate that money to a charity that the Islanders worked with, America's Vet Dogs. So those cute puppy calendars that you should all have, that's the charity we're going to be donating it to. So it should be a good time. It should be a lot of fun.
Yes, please come one, come all.
Yes, all are welcome. Tell your friends. So, Mitch, the Islanders are 2-1 in their last three games.
Yes.
But I didn't have that same reaction you did because they kind of played like garbage in two out of the three games.
Oh, it was a hot tire fire in two of those games. But I'll take the 4 points at this time of the year for sure. Like, regardless. Yes, they played like hot garbage. And it's not to say like I forgive them for that. I don't. But to see that there are that there are 4 points on the board, I'm happy with the result. I'm not happy with how they got that result.
No. I mean, obviously the win against the Rangers was fantastic. They dominated. The new second line looked amazing. In Montreal, they blew two separate two-goal leads and somehow still slipped away with a victory in overtime. And then against the Devils, they looked okay for a period, and then it was all downhill pretty quickly after that.
Oh, yeah, very quickly after that. It seemed almost immediately after the Devils, maybe not immediately, but within 10 minutes of the first period, they were done. Like, they had 10 minutes worth of energy in that game, and that was it.
Yeah, obviously, that's not going to be enough to win a hockey game at this level. You have to play a full 60 minutes, and they didn't even play a sixth of that. So
yeah, it was real bad. So what stands out to you? Is it just the level of play? Is it just... What is your takeaway from these three games?
You know, I'm going to give you a positive one because usually I'm more the negative one and you're like a positive guy. I am in love with this new Islanders second line that has been around the last couple of games due to Andrew Ladd being out of the lineup. I love Beauvillier and Barzal paired together. And Eberle, of course, because He has chemistry with Barzal, so I want to ride out that second line for as long as possible, even if and when Ladd comes back.
Yeah, sure, why not? Ladd has spent a lot of time on that third line last year, and he looked okay at the second half of the season. This is generally when he picks it back up, so yeah, I'm fine with that. Hey, if you can string Brock Nelson along and get him going, why the heck not?
That's my hope with it, at least. It's like the first line, when Bailey comes back, we know what that's going to be. The second line was fantastic with Ladd, but I like what I'm seeing right now because it seems like Beauvillier finally has a role with this team, something that he didn't really have for the longest time.
Yeah.
And I would give it a shot. I'd say maybe Ladd can get something, pry anything out of Brock Nelson, who has now gone, Mitch, 50 straight regulation periods without a goal. So golf clap it up for Brock Nelson. He has now gone 50, the big 5-0, the half a century mark.
That's really, really bad. Like, that's inexcusable bad. Like, at least he's put up, I think, 2 points in that stretch, maybe a few more. I'm going to say 2, and I'm pretty comfortable with that number. If someone told me it was 3, but, you know, whatever, plus or minus 1. But other than that, he has looked abject, invisible, just not there whatsoever. And it's depressing to see.
He did drop the gloves, though, last night, which was bizarre. I just was not expecting that at all.
Well, maybe because it's the first time he's ever done it in his career.
True.
So that's probably why. And he's not generally that type of player. But maybe that's something that we needed to see from Brock Nelson, or Brock Nelson needed to see from himself. I'm going to try something. I'm done. I'm tired. Maybe you harping on him every period has just gotten to him, and he's finally, you know what, done. I need to just get out of this funk, and maybe getting into fisticuffs is the best way to do it. And look, if you're going to do it, or if you're going to get into a fight, the best place to do it is in a hockey rink, because you're only going to get 5 minutes for it. There's no assault charges coming. There's nothing else. You're going to get 5 minutes. You're going to sit down in your little box and cool down, and then you can go play again.
You have some drunk, angry fans yell at you. That's about it.
Yeah, max.
I did look it up because you had me curious. He has 2 points over this stretch.
See? Yes.
But I counted up. Do you know how many games it's been since he scored?
50 periods.
Oh, no. No math, just throw out a number here. Let's,
I'm going to say guess. 13?
16 games without a goal.
Out of 45, 46, is it they're at now?
46. So he has made it almost a quarter of the way through an NHL season without a goal and with 2 points to his name.
With the contract season coming up. I know he's RFA, but still. Still, you want to be able to, you know, boost them numbers. Those are rookie numbers. Bad rookie numbers. Maybe not bad rookie, but not good rookie.
I know you probably think that I hate Brock Nelson, and I do. But I want him to succeed. Don't get me wrong. I would love for him to score 30 goals. But I must say, there is a little cynical bone in my body that has enjoyment tweeting out after every single period what number we're up to. I hope it goes like to 100. This is just getting to like ridiculous zone, and I'm ready to ride it out.
I want it to end tomorrow. Just score, Brock. Just against Boston, please just score. Get the monkey off your back. This is the time where he's supposed to be trending upwards, generally, right? You got October, November, he does okay. December, it falls into a valley. January, he dips lower, and it's starting to crescent back up. Like I said before, he follows the period of sunshine in a day. And the more sun there is in a day, the better Brock Nelson gets. He's a vitamin D haddock? Attic. I was going to say, anyways, another word, and it didn't want to come out. So I went with attic instead, mid-word. This is the time he's going to bring it out. So maybe against Boston he breaks it. Please, Brock, for the love of God, just score against Boston so we don't have to hear about this anymore. Just please.
Okay. You know how I'm usually good for one hot take an episode?
Oh, boy.
I have a hot take for you.
Okay.
We know how bad Alan Quine is on the top line.
Okay. I'm glad you caveated that, but yes, agreed.
All right. So we get him, we waive him, send him to Bridgeport because we know he is clearing waivers. There's no way anyone's picking him up. But if somebody does, who cares?
That's fine, yeah. Whatever.
Well, this is kind of not, this is not going to fit really because Bailey's coming back. But if Bailey wasn't coming back so soon, what would you think of putting Brock Nelson as a first line right wing?
I think I heard Stan Fischler say that after the Devils game, and I'm okay with it. If it gets Brock Nelson going, fine. Whatever, fine. As long as there's no negative impact on that top line, and probably this is where you're going, it's going to be better than having Alan Quine there.
That's exactly where I was going.
So yeah, I'm fine with it. Like, look, I like Alan Quine as a player. I think he's Casey Zizekas light. He's perfectly suited for that fourth line role. I love him there. That's where he slots. That's his bread and butter. Don't put him on the top line. Like, he's going to try his hardest. He's going to do his best. But unfortunately, he's not to that caliber. He's just not. And a lot of people might say, well, look at the Pittsburgh Penguins when they put Brendan Rust up there. He was kind of the same guy, and it worked. Yeah, it worked. Brendan Rust was just that type of player where it worked. It's not working with Alan Quine. He tried it. It didn't work. Look, it didn't work with Cal Clutterbuck last year. It doesn't work most of the time with these types of players. So just, can we stop the experiment? Put someone else up there. Like you said, Nelson, fine. Beauvillier even. Remember last year when he was up there for a little bit? That was great.
Anything. I would rather go back to Clutterbuck at this point. I can't. Would you rather Quine than Clutterbuck on the top line, Mitch?
Yeah, sure. Just
wow.
It's not to say that I think Quine is better than Clutterbuck. It's the idea that Doug Weight sees something in Quine that merits him being up there. Whatever that is. If it's just a hunch, if it's whatever.
I could tell you exactly what it is. One time, 2 years ago, he scored a big goal in double overtime, and that's it. That's all he's done ever. That's it. That's his entire... He scored one big goal in his life, Mitch. That's all he's done.
So Doug Weight comes to Alan Quine's locker, and he's like, all right, Alan, remember that time you scored in double overtime? Remember that feeling? Remember how you were on top of the world that day? Well, I'm going to need you to keep feeling like that for the rest of the next 2 weeks until Josh Bailey gets out, because you're playing on the top line with Johnny. All right, break. Good luck. And Alan Quine is just sitting there going, that was, oh boy, oh, please no, oh God, no.
And he was on the top line in that series too, Mitch. It's insanity.
I know, like, but that's the thing. That's why I say, no, I don't think we should put Clutterbuck, because I know what happens. So why make it not better is where I'm going with this. If we're going to have a bad thing and an equally bad thing, just keep the equally bad thing that's already there.
Fair.
So
that's fair.
I wanted to bring up one thing before we move on. We talked about how the Rangers game was a great thing. It was terrible with the Devils because they dropped like rocks after 10 minutes. But I wanted to bring up the Habs game, not so much because of the performance they put in, but because of the performance that Carey Price put in. It's not every day that you're going to go into Montreal and face a Carey Price that's going to put up an .833 save percentage.
True.
They got 24 shots in Carey Price and scored five with overtime.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
That's amazing. They should have won that game handedly. They did win, so like... Anyways, you don't score five goals against Carey Price. You don't. Unless you're barraging him with shots, like the Habs did to one Thomas Greiss, where they put up 56 shots. And you know what? That's a team record for the Habs. A team record for the Montreal Canadiens. They've been around since 1862 or whatever it is. And this
almost
is the highest. Yeah, I know. Almost as old as I am. And they've just now eclipsed that. That's insane. In today's game, that's insane. The Islanders should be ashamed of themselves with the performance they put on that night. They're lucky they won.
I agree 100%. How they somehow escaped Montreal with a victory is honestly beyond me. I thought they blew a two-goal lead twice.
Yeah.
Normally, if you do it once, you don't win. But doing it twice and still winning? Yeah. It's an anomaly in itself.
Against Carey Price, who I know isn't having the greatest year this year, but he's still Carey Price. He still has that potential in him as a game changer. And he did not change that game that night. Or if he did, it was in the Islanders' favor. But to then say, like, we stole that game, we were lucky, and then to go back home against the Devils and put the stinkiest of stinkers up, inexcusable.
Very true. So 2-1.
Yeah.
Not great, but no. We'll take it. 1 point out of a playoff spot at the moment.
Yeah, sure. That's fine.
On to short topic number two. Our boy Michael Dal Colle got called up. I'm saying our boy facetiously.
There you go. Easy for you to say.
Yeah, it wouldn't come out for some reason. He's played 3 games, Mitch. What are we thinking so far on Dal Colle?
I'm lukewarm on him, but I'm okay if he stays. Mainly because what I wrote when he was called up was, all I want to see from Dal Colle is not be a negative. Just look like you belong and don't be a negative out there. Now, I don't know how Doug Weight sees the situation. He made this kind of reference the other day against the Devils that some guys aren't pulling their weight, it seems. Who those some guys are, nobody knows. I'm hoping that Dal Colle is not one of them. I'm hoping he's doing enough to say, like, I belong at the NHL level because I have the capacity to play at this level. I just hope he's not doing anything negative. I haven't seen anything negative so far, so it would lead me to believe that he's not, but I'm not Doug Weight.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
I'm a little biased on the situation.
A little.
I understand. I'm going to try and look at this as objectively as possible.
Oh, wow. Okay. I thought you were going to go complete, like...
That was just the setup, but you'll see where I'm going.
You set me up to break me down. Great.
Yeah, pretty much. He hasn't been a problem per se in these 3 games, but he hasn't really done anything, Mitch.
Yep, that's true.
In 40 minutes of ice time in his 3 games, he has 0 shots on goal, no goals, no assists, no points, a 0 plus minus, 0 penalty minutes. He's taken 1 shot that wasn't on goal.
Okay.
He's made 1 hit and blocked 1 shot. He's kind of just there. He's not really doing anything. He's just skating around, kind of slow, and just there.
He's Jason Chimera from the start of the season.
The slow version of Jason Chimera, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I call him slow. I wouldn't call him quick, but... And maybe that's just it. Like, there's not. It's playing into the point that you're making is that he's perfectly average. Or maybe not average, but, like, baseline. As in, like, he can play here, but he's not adding anything, and he's not taking anything away. He's just there.
Yeah, so it's just very, like, I've been, on him. Like, he put a couple of good shifts together, and I'm like, okay, you know, that's not bad. But, I mean, you've watched the last 3 games. Have you really noticed him that much out on the ice? I know he's only playing 13 minutes a night, but I'm not really noticing him that much.
That's still a lot. Remember when Bovilia couldn't get more than 10 minutes under Capuano?
True.
When he started? So the 13 minutes is still a considerable amount of minutes for a rookie. But it brings me back to my point, is that you're not noticing him because you're not getting any of the positives, but you're also not noticing him because he's not doing anything negative out there. Mm-hmm. Right? Which I'm hoping is him just trying to find his feet in the NHL. Right? Remember when Barzal started, he had those 2 games and he was completely starstruck. Although, to be fair with him, they put him on the ice for the Capitals and the Montreal Canadiens. Like, Alex Ovechkin, Carey Price, Nicholas Backstrom, Max Pacioretty, I guess that doesn't really matter to him so much, but still, these big-name players that he's playing up against in games 1 and 2. And that was it. Done. Sent back. Maybe this is for Dal Colle. This is just kind of him getting his legs going. I'm not going to get intimidated. I'm just going to take my time, and I'm going to do it the right way. Like, we know he develops slow. He's been, he was drafted in 2014, and we're now 2018. He's finally getting to the NHL. So he's just a slow, his process might take a little bit longer. So that's why I thought, as long as he's not a negative out there, which he hasn't been. So I'm hoping that by Boston, Chicago, and maybe even by the time Arizona hits, he's still around, and that's when he can hit his stride and start showing what he can do.
So I guess my next question for you is, what is your realistic expectations for him?
So when we say expectations, are we talking about, like, production type stuff?
Yeah, production. And then, like, how long do you expect him to be here, and what do you expect him to start producing at?
I think he was called up on an emergency basis, if I'm not mistaken, when Ladd went down. So that I think the way it works is that as soon as Ladd comes back or is available again, he's got to go back down. So I don't know when Ladd's coming back. We haven't heard. I picture he's probably going to be around for the road trip when they go to Vegas. Or if Ladd isn't back by the time they head out to Chicago on Friday, we'll say, then I would expect that Dal Colle will be around till the 25th. Maybe. Okay. And between then, I hope he gets at least a point or two in terms of production. And that everything else stays the same. No turnovers or not too many turnovers. No penalty minutes. He's, you know, within a reasonable plus-minus range if we're looking at that. His Corsi numbers are okay. I just don't want him to turn into a negative. I don't want him to start taking those chances because he's trying to push for something he doesn't necessarily have this season. Just get your feet under you, get comfortable at the NHL level, and you'll be back next year and own it. What are your expectations for him?
I guess similar to yours in a sense. I don't think he's going to have that big of an impact. I think he's just going to be another guy out there on the ice, like kind of like Tanner Fritz in a sense.
Right.
Don't get me wrong, I think Dal Colle has much more of an upside than someone like Tanner Fritz, but they're both kind of just taking up space. They're not doing a whole lot on the positive end, but they're not super negative players at the same time. They kind of fall somewhere in the middle, I guess. Maybe I would like them to get a couple points before he goes back down.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think everyone would like that for that to happen. Is it feasible for it to happen? I think so. Like, just even in Arizona, anyone can score against Arizona, it seems. But we'll see. Like, Vegas is going to be a tough test. Vegas at home.
So that's gonna be tough. What if he gets up to like seven? He's at three right now. What if he plays something like seven games before he's sent down and he still doesn't have a point? Are you concerned? Do you care?
No, I don't. I don't. Again, for me, all of this is essentially like a fact-finding mission to make sure that Dal Colle can play at the NHL level and be comfortable. And I think that's what this is all about. And they'll send him back down. He's going back down anyways for the rest of the season whenever Ladd comes back. And then that's where, okay, now get your game underneath you to know that you can play at that higher level and next year come back and hit it. I think that's it. I think that's the best case scenario right now. If he does better than that and he starts lighting the league on fire, great. I want to manage my expectations.
Honestly, I would like him to perform well and then the Islanders try and bait him in a trade.
Sure. Fine.
Just because, I'm not happy with his performance since he's been drafted. If he performs well, I wouldn't mind moving him for something you really need. Just because me personally, I am higher on Kiefer Bellows as a prospect than Michael Dal Colle, so I'd feel more comfortable moving away from him and instead having Bellows on my third line next year.
Sure. Yeah, you're not going to get any debate from me on that.
That's just the justification for it on my end. But if Dal Colle performs, stays up here and starts performing well, you know, good on him. And then go back to Bridgeport and continue to be on your hot stretch down there.
Perfect. Yeah. Agreed.
All right. For our short topic number three, we want to talk a little bit about Yaroslav Halak. He has played much better of late, but there has been one issue with him. Not with him, but when he's in net. The amount of shots he has to face. It's absurd, Mitch.
It's insane.
I was going to look at his game log.
Last five. Shots against 42, 39, 46, 38, 37. Not a single game under 35 shots in his last five starts.
The last time he faced anything less than 35 shots was December 13th.
Eesh.
Against Dallas. He still gave up four goals on 20 shots, which was pretty bad, but it's been a while. He's got his work cut out for him.
Oh yeah, for sure. He's definitely got his work cut out for him. Maybe it's just the idea the team is finally comfortable with him back there, and so they let things go a little bit. maybe not. That may be completely oversimplifying the situation of the two injuries on the back end to Boychuk and DeHaan, and just the injuries up front, right? So Bailey, Ladd, who else am I missing here? Cizikas. I'm missing someone else. Kuhlman, whatever. And coming in are these younger, less experienced players who, like Tanner Fritz, even like Beauvillier for a while, who may not have that defensive game there yet, who, you know, leave the man open, make rookie mistakes. And so that leads to a lot of shot opportunities, and we're seeing it. Halak's getting his work in.
I just wanted to look something up because I was curious with him. The last time Halak played a full game and faced under 30 shots was November.
Wow.
So it's been a while. He's had a lot of mileage on him because they've been riding him out because of the Thomas Gray situation, although I did think he played pretty well, all things considered, in Montreal.
Yeah.
But, Mitch, I know you pulled up some advanced statistics with Yaroslav Halak and how he compared to the rest of the league. I wanted to get into that a little bit.
Yeah, so it's all fine and dandy to look at save percentages and even to look at goals against average, but that doesn't paint a whole picture. What I wanted to look at is high danger save percentage. So how good is he in those really risky situations, in those situations where you're more likely to get a goal? And his save percentage in high danger situations is 80. And you go, okay, great, that sounds bad, but that sounds bad based off of just general save percentage. I wanted to see how he compares to the league. So what I pulled up on Corsica.hockey is all goalie stats for this season. And I took out anyone who hasn't played more than 500 minutes or 499 minutes. And then I said, okay, well, what's the average high danger save percentage in the league? And it's 79.48. And Halak's at 80.2. So he's above average in terms of high danger save percentages. And then you're like, well, okay, so he's above average there. So that means he's not, most of the goals he's letting in aren't, maybe not most of the goals, but he's below average in other areas, which is kind of disappointing when you think about it. Like, I thought that the high danger save percentage was going to be really, really low and really, really bad. Like, Halak is just good everywhere else. It's just the Isles are really bad at limiting high danger save, like high danger opportunities. But that doesn't seem to be the case.
Right. That is interesting. I thought it would be a lower number. Like, I know we were talking off the air before we started recording. Thomas Grice's high danger save percentage is, like, pitiful. It's brutally bad. It's 67.02. Oof. I didn't know if it was going to be that low, but I thought it would definitely be below average and in the lower 70s. But to be above 80%, that's not bad.
Yeah, so it's 80.6 is high danger save percentage. Which is right there in like the middle of the pack, right? In the league. So he's giving us average goaltending there. It's just breakdowns are happening everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So like his medium danger save percentage is 93. Grice's is 91. His low danger save percentage, Halak's, is 97.2. Grice's is 98.6. So just by those numbers and considering the context of what we said about Grice already, you can see that Halak is a little bit weaker in other areas than his counterpart is. So maybe that's where the difference is coming.
Right. And another thing that I found interesting was his save percentage while the Islanders were on the power play.
Oh, yeah.
Way low, 0.788. His previous career low, well, there was one year he only played in 2012-2013, the shorthanded.
Are you looking at the power play percentages or the shorthanded percentages? I think what you're saying is his shorthanded opportunities against, essentially. How good is he shorthanded? Or, sorry, when his team is on the power play.
Yeah, when his team is on the power play.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
But yeah, it's low. It's low. He had one year at 0.714, which is like brutally bad. But everything else was pretty good. Like last year is .933. The year before that was also .933.
Right, but like I think there that's more of a team thing, right? Because what we're talking here is how many shorthanded goals is he letting up, and the Islanders, as we know, have let up the league's most. I think it is at 9, or is it 8 shorthanded goals against? And I don't know if you can necessarily blame the goalie for those, because most of those are going to be breakaways, right? So you're already 50-50.
Yeah, true.
What I think we should focus on is essentially his power play save percentage. So when the opposition is on the power play, he's at an .862.
Right.
Which is the lowest since 2012 when he had an .860. Sorry, no. 2014 when he had an .855. He's been an above .915 or .915, .912 the last 2 years. So he's been getting great – we've been getting great save percentages from Halak on the power play or on the penalty kill, except for this year, which is a problem, which, you know, just makes sense considering the Islanders' penalty kill is what, one of the worst in the leagues.
Right.
Are we still 30th? I think we might be 28th now. We might have gone up a few notches. So it's important to see that it may not necessarily be all on Halak. There's definitely some team-wide things here where he's giving up. He's pretty average in most places, but in some other places he's not. And some of those other places where he's not above average or at least at average, you can kind of look at the team and say, well, that looks like a team thing.
Right, because I feel like earlier on this year we were having a lot of debates where is this the goalies, is this the defense? I think what we're finding out as the season's going on is it's a little bit of both.
I think we have that it was the goaltending at the beginning of the year. And as we transcend into the middle part of the season, it's now the defense. Mm-hmm. So we can't have both, it seems. We can't have good defense and okay goaltending for some reason. We're not allowed to have those.
No. Why can't we have nice things?
No, exactly.
You want to get into the long topic for this week's episode? Fan favorite, Eyes on Isles favorite, Josh Hosang is in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And it hasn't been a fun time for him down in Bridgeport.
No.
Kind of questionably almost could have been thrown underneath the bus by his coach. I guess we'll start there. What did you think of Brent Thompson's quotes calling him immature and then a baby?
Well, he called him baby first and immature second, and they weren't used in conjunction. At first, you read the headline and it sounds terrible. You know,
right.
Josh Hosang is a baby and immature. Oh my God, what is happening? And then when you read it, you're like, okay, that still sounds bad. That sounds really bad. But then when you hear his justification, the writer's justification, he was, oh, well, Brent, I asked Brent Thompson about Josh Hosang still being young. And what he was telling me is that Josh Hosang is a baby because Josh Hosang is so young. And you're like, that's not what you wrote. And let's assume that you're right. Fine. I can absolutely see where that's true, but man, I wish that had been clarified in the piece because, oh boy. Oof. Maybe it was, and I just misread it. Maybe it was. I'm going to retract what I said and give him the benefit of the doubt on both sides. I'm not going to get mad about it because I know when people get mad about something I write, I get it. But it seems that Brent Thompson was just referring to his age when he called him a baby. However, that doesn't preclude that he's not immature. So the immature comment still stands. That's rough to hear from your coach. He just threw you under a bus. I know you didn't want to say it, Matt, but I did.
Yeah, I didn't like that comment. I know that people got on me for saying like, oh, he was just talking about his age and why didn't you use the full quote. Well, because those are the two words that stuck out to me. Like, how would you feel if you were a young kid, 21 years old, and then your coach is saying, oh, you're a baby and you're immature? I don't know. To me, I just feel like one of the things that makes Josh Hosang great is his confidence, and the Islanders are just keep like beating down on his confidence. And I don't know. I just feel like we're going to see another Ryan Strome situation.
Oof.
That's my fear. I think he has more talent.
Yeah.
And the ceiling could be higher, but I haven't liked the handling of Josh Hosang this year from the get-go.
Yeah, and this is where I got to in one of my pieces where I said that Josh Hosang has to fix this. He does, not the team. It's not to say the team isn't without blame here. It's that the team has the opportunity to be this rigid. They can say, we're setting a line and we want you to do this. And we can withhold ice time. We can do whatever we want. Maybe not whatever we want, but we have a lot more tools and avenues at our disposal to mold you and break you into the player that we want you to be, whether you like it or not. And the player has very few. They could say, I don't want to play for you anymore, like the Jonathan Drouin, and we saw how that worked out for him. He ended up doing well and got traded out to Montreal eventually. But he had to play. He couldn't just sit out and not do anything. So it's up to the player because it's completely in his control. If the team wants him to do X, Y, Z, try to do those things. If you can't do them, you can't do them. Do them to the best of your ability. That should show up eventually. And if you can do them, do it. You might not like it, but that's all you've got because the team can set the line and they can be rigid with it and you cannot as a player. Sorry. That's just how it works. I don't like it either, but that's just how the system is set up right now. So you can't, what are you going to do? Fight it and say, screw it, I'm going to sit out? No, you can't do that because now you're not playing the game that you want to play and you're really just shooting yourself in the foot.
So what do you think specifically Josh Hosang needs to do different? Is it the attitude / confidence, or is it trying to play a more defensive game and not take as many chances?
I don't think he needs to change anything. What I meant by that piece, or not even what I meant, but what the point of that piece is that, what I meant to,
could I rephrase my question? What do you think the Islanders want to do different?
Yeah, I didn't want to put words in the Islanders' mouth because I don't know where they're going with this. I don't know what they want, but Josh Hosang certainly does, right? The Islanders must have communicated to him and say, we want you to stop turning over the puck. We want you to skate in straight lines, whatever the heck that means. And we want you to, flip your stick whenever you score a goal. We'll say that that's what it was. It's not, but let's just say that's what it was. He can go and change those things or work on changing those things in whatever capacity he can. And as long as he's working to change those, I think the team will be appeased. But he's not for whatever reason. And again, I don't know what those three things are or four or five or six or one thing is. I don't know, but he knows what they are and he needs to work on them, whatever that is. Right? Like, do you see it otherwise, or?
I don't know why the island, it just seems like they have this agenda against him.
Sure. Maybe.
Like, what I don't get is how some players are treated versus others. Like, the veterans have so much more leeway and stuff like that. Like, okay, for instance, not that he's necessarily a veteran, but Alan Quine had a terrible turnover last night. If that was right. Josh Hosang, he would have been on the next bus to Bridgeport.
Defense. I say defense, and you're going to go, well, we're not talking about defense. But all I'm saying is that his defensive game is probably more complete. And so that means more. Why? I don't know. Because the game is still, you still have to score goals. Sure, you have to stop them, and you have to play soundly enough to prevent the team from scoring against you. But you still have to generate enough scoring chances on your own to score goals. And to me, that seems more important. But I think that's just it. And with veterans, you got proof of concept or the potential for proof of concept. Whereas you say someone like Jason Chimera has over 1,000 games played in the NHL and you go, well, I know what he's all about. I know he can play at the NHL level because he's done it 1,000 times before, literally. Yeah, well, that's not necessarily how it works when you get to 38 years old. That's not how it works anymore.
And the frustrating part for me with Hosang is you look at how many injuries this team has and the fact that Alan Quine's playing on the top line. Would it really hurt you that much to just call him back up here and see if he helps you out on offense at all? The Islanders have been, you can't say that the Islanders' bottom six hasn't been atrocious and he can't be somewhat of an upside and give you some secondary scoring from your bottom two lines. I don't know. I think personally, he's worth the shot, especially with the amount of injuries the Islanders have had.
Yeah, I won't disagree with that. I just think that the Islanders are probably thinking, we sent him down for a reason. We want him to fix that. We want that to be fixed because he's worth too much to us to not fix it. I think.
I don't know. I feel like they're spiting yourself doing that, though.
Sure, probably. Like, and look, they didn't want to do that with Anthony Beauvillier. They sent him down. They said, well, you know what? The experiment is done. Don't worry about it. Come back. You scored your two goals. You're good. And obviously the tasks or the goals for Bovilla were different than Hosang when they sent him down, but it just seems that, okay, well, which one is it? Clearly it means that Hosang has not reached the goals that the organization has set out for him. So he needs to work on that, whatever that is. I don't know what it is. I'm honestly putting it on him, and some people may say that's not fair, but think about it. The team has the ability and to be as rigid as they want to be. The players don't. They have to be flexible to what the team that drafts them wants from them. That's how this works. Or they can leave town. They could be a begrudging player like Nino Niederreiter and just eventually leave town and hope that they do better somewhere else. But it doesn't always work that way.
No. The last thing that I have to say on Hosang. In 22 games with the Islanders this year, he has 12 points.
Yeah.
And in 19 games with the Sound Tigers, he has 13 points. So he's still producing points. He's giving you offense.
Yeah, that's clearly not what they sent him down to do, though, right? Like, that's not what they're looking for. That's kind of like a known quantity for them.
I know. It's just frustrating me.
Yeah, I know.
I don't keep hitting on these points and pointing out, in my opinion, the ridiculousness of it. I don't know. It's my coping mechanism, Mitch. Don't question it.
I will question anything and everything I want to. Like, why the Islanders are being so hard on Josh Hosang. I don't get it either. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. If he's going to make mistakes, let him make mistakes in the NHL and teach him at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason I'm not a coach. But to be fair, they could probably use a guy like Josh Hosang in the lineup. Just saying.
Yes. Garth, we know you're listening. Make it happen.
That's right.
All right. I want to get into the social segment.
Yes.
Okay. I know you had a couple of tweets that you wanted to share with us.
Yeah. So this is essentially my highlights of the week portion, where there are two tweets that I wanted to bring up that floated my boat this week. And the first one comes from @collegecross, or CROSSE. I don't know how to pronounce that necessarily. I'm going to say cross. Anyways, his tweet says, "Not many owners would stand outside enemy territory and take pictures with fans, but Isles have one who is all for the fans. Great to see," and he adds a bunch of people, not us. Still found it. And it's a picture of John Ledecky outside of MSG taking pictures with people. And it's not just he's out there taking pictures. They're wearing Isles gear outside of MSG. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I love it.
Big props to that.
I was going to say, I think John Ledecky is very self-aware when it comes to Islanders fans. He knows how much this fan base loves the team, and I think he appreciates that, and he will go above and beyond and like stop and take pictures and talk with fans. I think that's really cool. You don't see that a lot.
Yeah, he may not put out ads in the paper shooting down the Rangers like previous owners have done, but he's on that level where he gets it, and he's very I'm going to say memeable, because he's always taking pictures, and he knows what's going on. He's outside of MSG taking pictures with a fan. And it's not like a league-wide taboo that you don't do that. Clearly, there are Islanders fans going to MSG to watch the Islanders play at MSG. It's just, it's a funny juxtaposition.
Ooh, good word.
Thank you. The last tweet that I had was from Brian King. He is not an Islanders fan. He's actually an Edmonton Oilers fan, and this will kind of flow with the narrative of what we've seen recently. The New York Islanders traded Ryan Strong, Griffin Reinhart, and a third-round pick for the entire second line, which was Beauvillier, Barzal, Eberle. And then he ends his tweet, ", #FireShiarelli. Yeah, we agree. We agree, Brian. That was Brian @Kinger999. Totally agree with that. Thank you for the second line. Peter Chiarelli.
I don't want the Oilers to fire Peter Chiarelli. I want Garth to fleece him one more time.
We still need Ryan Nugent Hopkins or someone else of that. Connor McDavid, please.
For old time's sake.
Yeah, that would be nice. That's all I had. Those are my two highlights of the week.
Okay, I had a couple fun ones. First of all, this one's a little bit more of a news, but we saw some friends skating on the ice.
Yes.
Today. Our boy, yes. Josh Bailey.
Woo!
Looks like he could be back tomorrow, potentially.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Oh, my God. Thank God.
Yeah, Ladd was on the... let's see if we get the full list. Johnny Boychuk, Cizikas, Andrew Ladd, and surprisingly, Nikolai Kuhlman on the ice.
God, Jesus, Nikolai, come on. It's great to see him back. I hope he can play a few games and end his Islander career that way. Because let's face it, he's done for us. But I was really kind of earmarked his salary as an LTIR cap relief so we can get a top four defenseman. But I'd rather see him play than not, I guess. Although I still would rather that top four D.
Yeah, I would too. Sorry, Nico.
Yeah, sorry about that. You and your health.
And there was one more quick one. I don't know if you saw Friedman's 31 Thoughts that came out.
I did.
The Devils showing interest in Brock Nelson?
Yeah.
What?
Please, Devils. Oh, my God, please. What can we get? Look, Johansson. We'll take Marcus Johansson off your hands. Please. I don't know how the cap works out because I don't know what his cap is like, and I know that we're pretty high up against it, but please. Come on. And or I don't know. Jeez. What's the other? God, I keep forgetting his name. Not Green. Not Woods. Not Lovejoy. What's the rookie defenseman they just picked up from college? Will Butcher. Got it. Him.
Oh, Will
Butcher. We'll take him off your hands. No problem. I don't think they're getting rid of him. That would be I would be willing to let Brock go to a divisional rival.
Yes, I would too.
So long as we play that divisional rival in December and January only.
Oh, I like that. It took me a second for that one to register because that's his hibernation period.
That's right.
That's when he's sleeping. Oh,
that's
good.
Peak hibernation period for Brock, so it's perfect. As long as we can put that as a condition, so like a conditional fourth round pick with Brock Nelson, and the conditions that we can only play the Devils on in December and January. Done.
Lock it in.
Yeah, perfect.
All right. Before we put a bow on this episode, I want to once again plug the live podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably heard us say this already, but in case you tuned in late, it's a podcast, so I can't see how that really
works. You just skipped ahead to the end for some reason.
Sorry, I'm used to live radio, so that's why I did that. Anyway, February 2nd, 7 p.m., South Hempstead Fire Department. Be there. We are going to do live raffles, games, trivia. You could be walking away with prizes for free. There is free drinks and food, and you could talk Islanders with us two idiots. What is there not to do on a Friday? That's the perfect thing to do.
Yeah, why not do that?
Love it.
I'm going to be doing it because I'm going to be there. I'm driving all the way from Canada. The least you guys could do, guys and girls could do, is drive, I don't know, wherever you're from.
Everything. Another thing you learn when you come to Long Island, everything's 15 minutes away, no matter where it is.
Seriously?
No, but okay. That's what everyone says. If you ask someone on Long Island, like, oh, how far is place X? They'll say 10, 15 minutes. That's always a standard answer.
That's the thing? Okay. Yeah. You guys can all quiz me on my Canadiana when we're there.
Oh, do you know what we might have to do?
Am I going to have to bring some Canadian money so you can smell it? For its maple syrupiness? No, it's got maple syrup in it, like you said a while ago.
I did? I had some money. I don't even remember that.
That was a while ago.
Okay. We should do, I should have to teach you, Long Island things, and you'll have to teach me Canadian things.
Perfect. Done. Okay. That'll be one of the games.
Okay. I like it. So we'll have to come up with a list. And that's coming up pretty quick. So next week is going to be our regular scheduled show. But then the following week, we're going to be doing it live on Friday.
Whoa, that's so quick.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to meeting all of you beautiful people.
Absolutely. So always give us a follow on Twitter at EyesOnIslesFS. We're giving you gifts, live updates, all your favorite stuff. My personal Twitter is at Matt O'Leary NY. Mitch's is at TLO Mitch. Give us a like on Facebook as well, facebook.com/EyesOnIsles. And as always, visit that website, EyesOnIsles.com, for all your Islanders needs. Mitch, have yourself a good night.
You too, Matt.